It's the Troopany Show with your host, James Troopany.
Hello and welcome to the Troopany Show. My name is James Troopany. This is my show, and we had a bit of a disaster recording this week's show. Myself and Alex Edwards take a look at the other side of WrestleMania. But we had about 45 minutes of technical difficulties, so this show is a little bit abridged, as you can tell. In the first section, we talk about Lucha Underground versus Impact Wrestling. I took out Alex's part because he couldn't hear it, so it's just my responses, and I've tried to make it flow like a regular conversation. And the sound quality isn't what we normally go for on the Troopany Show, but we hope you enjoy it nonetheless. We try and never miss a week if we can, and we didn't want to give you nothing this week, so this is this week's show. We talk about Lucha Underground, and we talk about Ring of Honor, Supercard of Honor, and the other things going on at WrestleMania. So we hope you enjoy the show. But first of all, I started talking about Lucha Underground versus Impact Wrestling.
Okay, so it was an interesting show last week from Impact Wrestling and from Lucha Underground. They did a show together at WrestleCon. The show opened with the Monster Matanza, Cueto. He defeated Caleb Conley, Chavo Guerrero Jr., Jack Evans, Matt Sydal, and Moose in 6 minutes and 40 seconds. Now, the obvious thing here to do here would be to have Matanza versus Abyss. You know, have the monster versus the monster. But they went another way with it, and they tried to get as many people into this match as they could. Get people interested, keep people moving. Yeah, I think that's the main takeaway we could take from this match, and I think it was really, really good for what it was. The next match was the current Knockouts champion, LA, defending successfully against Taya Valkyrie. 9 minutes and 14 seconds. Taya works for both Lucha Underground and for Impact Wrestling, so this was an interesting one to see how they present her. They didn't present her much different than they have been in either promotion, to be honest with you. This was very good. It zipped along at a fair old speed, this, and I enjoyed it. And I always love Ali's work, and I love Taya Valkyrie's work, so for a good old-fashioned women's wrestling match, this was very, very good for what it was. 9 minutes and 14 seconds. I think this was probably a match thrown on here because of the crossover. I was slightly kind of concerned because they kind of like, they didn't job tie her out by any stretch of the imagination, but she's got this big monster feud with Rosemary coming up, so I kind of thought they would want to protect her and have a count finish or something like that. Okay then, now the next one was interesting to say the least. OVE wrestled Scott Steiner and Teddy Hart. It happened.
Yeah. I mean, OVE are currently like resident kind of whipping boys at the moment. They're Sammy Callahan's boys, which has not put them in a good stead as far as like presentation is concerned. Because you've essentially got two old guys who just come in and beat your star tag team. That doesn't make any sense. Next match on the card was Aerostar, Drago, and King Cuerno. They defeated Andrew Everett, Desmond Xavier, and DJZ in a fantastic match. I really enjoyed this. It's one of the best things I watched the whole of WrestleMania weekend. And there was some really good competition for that, but this worked really, really well. Good old-fashioned Lucha Libre trios match. The next match that came along was for the Impact World Tag Team Championship and pitted Latin American Exchange, LAX, Ortiz and Santana defending their title against Killshot on the Mac. 13 minutes and 14 seconds. Again, this worked really, really well. The champions show that tag team specialism is their thing. I really enjoy it. I'm not been over hot on LAX as a faction, but as a tag team, I think I really enjoy their work. Interestingly, accompanied by Diamante, who's been off through injury for a while, so it's nice to see her back. But otherwise, I think it's been good, and I enjoyed it. I thought it was really cool. The next match after that was Brian Cage and Eli Drake. 7 minutes and 12 seconds, Brian Cage taking the win. This is going to be interesting because of how it plays out on TV. You know, this is a widely public available event, and you don't want to have Eli Drake losing too many matches, even to well-rounded opposition. But this is two of my favourite wrestlers in the company. It was LU versus Eli Drake, so it was really Cage versus Eli Drake, but it worked really well for the guys that they are. Kind of a standard WWE match from about 6 years ago, but fun for what it was. The next matchup on this particular card was Jeremiah Crane, who was representing Lucha Underground, and obviously we know him, unfortunately, as Sammy Callahan in Impact Wrestling, and regular listeners will know I can't stand Sammy Callahan, and I don't like Jeremiah Crane either. But what I was intrigued me is this is a blood feud and was billed as the payoff to this blood feud, but it didn't go on last. It wasn't the main event, which intrigued me. I don't know why they didn't put this on last, considering the main event ended up being a non-title. Well, it was going to be a non-title match anyway. Yeah, it was all right. It's got Jeremy Crane in it. It's got Sami Callihan in it, so it was sloppy. The biggest issue with it was, for me, was the run-in at the end, which OVE was supposed to do, were clearly late by about 3 minutes, which meant Eddie Edwards had to stand over Jeremiah Crane with a chair on his chest, as had happened on Impact Wrestling a few weeks ago, for what seemed like 7 minutes of just wondering around whether he should hit him or not, waiting for OVE to come and do the finish, which was sloppy, to say the least. No wonder Don Callis had a face like thunder when he came out. Yeah, I wasn't a fan of this. So, generally speaking, I didn't really like this match much. A bad idea, badly executed. Yeah. Yeah, hopefully this is over soon and we can go back to some decent wrestling from Eddie Edwards. He'll get a partner that, you know, get someone to work with that is good. The main event for the Impact versus Lucha Super Show ended up being Pentagon Dark versus Austin Aries and Phoenix in a three-way dance, not for the Impact Wrestling Championship. Originally scheduled to be a match between Alberto El Patron, Austin Aries, and a tag match against the Lucha Brothers, Phoenix and Pentagon Dark. This didn't happen because eventually Alberto El Patron did not turn up on time, and he was late for it, was given a no-show essentially by Impact Wrestling, and apparently is gone from Impact Wrestling. Right then, so moving on to, just other highlights of the week for you, Alex. What else did you find important from this particular week of wrestling? Were there any other matches you thought that were really, really good?
So staying away from the WWE stuff, because I'm sure everyone listening to this has heard everything about everything happened at WrestleMania, NXT, all that stuff. You've heard it all to death, so let's talk about the other stuff. On the Thursday, we had GCW presenting Matt Riddle's Bloodsport, which I watched that show. It was a sort of a wrestling MMA hybrid show, which was interesting. They had the ring had no ropes. It was all sort of MMA rules matches. You could only win by knockout or submission. So it's an interesting idea for a show, especially when you've got sort of Matt Riddle as the face of it. Originally, for that show, the main event was scheduled to be Matt Riddle against Loki, but then Loki was taken out with an injury, and we got maybe the best replacement possible. We got the main event of Matt Riddle versus Minoru Suzuki in an MMA rules match. So, just going into that, you can't really get much better than Minoru Suzuki, you know, doing what he's famous for doing, really.
Minoru Suzuki doing Minoru Suzuki stuff.
Exactly. And so, as soon as I saw that announced, I was hyped for this show. And so, luckily for us, it actually was on at a normal time for us in the UK. It was on at 9 p.m, which was a treat, seeing as we're usually having to stay up till 3 in the morning to watch this stuff. But, it was an alright show, actually. It was fun. It was different and it was interesting. Sort of the standout things on there were the main event of Minoru Suzuki against Matt Riddle, where Suzuki choked out Matt Riddle with a rear naked choke. Then they hugged afterwards and Minoru Suzuki smiled and hugged a man, which was weird.
Smiled and hugged a man.
And then he didn't get him into a choke afterwards. He goes, hugged him, smiled, waved to the crowd, and walked to the back.
Yeah, I've got to say, I did enjoy that match as well. It was the funnest match. That possibly my favourite of the weekend, I think, as well. One and that triple threat.
It was what we sort of... So when those rumours last year came around about Matt Riddle maybe going to New Japan, it was what we were all excited for, and we got it here. It was fun. There was also a really good match on that show with Walter against Tom Lawler, where the sort of the standout spot I can remember is Tom Lawler trying to hit a Roman Reigns style Superman punch and Walter just chopping him out of the air, sending him across the ring. It was a fantastic visual and it was a fun match. That show overall was entertaining. It was something a bit different, which was nice, seeing as we had about 7 billion other wrestling shows that weekend.
Yeah.
Having something that's a bit of a gimmick and a bit different was fun.
To be fair, Matt Riddle had about 7 wrestling shows in that day.
Yeah, I think he was actually the most booked wrestler of the weekend. I think him, Will Ospreay was up there. I think Keith Lee might have been up there as well, as far as matches that weekend.
I've got to say, because I watched a bits of the Beyond show, and the match he had with Deonna Purrazzo was absolutely outstanding.
Yeah.
It was really, really good. It was Purrazzo's first intergender match, and she said she was glad she had it with Matt Riddle, because it worked. Their styles matched each other.
Definitely.
And I saw one of my other favourites was the WrestleCon New Japan stuff was really, really cool. So it was Golden Lovers versus Chucky T and Flip Gordon, which I really enjoyed.
I haven't got around to watching that yet.
That's a fun match.
It was really good.
Yeah, that's a fun match. And there was other stuff which too involving Sami Callihan, which I wasn't that keen about.
that is what it is.
Yeah, it was David Starr, Hiroshi Tanahashi, and I can't remember who they were tagging with, but they went up against Sami Callihan, and David Starr had been giving Sami Callihan shit all week on Twitter about being a sloppy worker, so I can imagine that was not fun for anyone.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So, you know, but they all seemed to manage to get through the without a massive argument and not having a fight. So, but it was such good wrestling all weekend. You know, it was the standard on the indie shows is that high now. You can float between that and WWE, and it doesn't seem to make a difference.
For sure. And if you are looking for different stuff, you had a lot of these cool sort of gimmick shows. So you had the Beyond Intergender show. You had Matt Riddle's Bloodsport, and you had Joe Janela's Spring Break, which was just a wonderful mess. It was just. It was one of the strangest shows I've seen where... So, for the crowd in New Orleans, the show started, I think, at midnight and went on until about 4 a.m. So the main event hit the ring about 3:30 in the morning after these people had just watched wrestling since about 11 o'clock that morning. So they'd had about 15 hours of wrestling by that point, non-stop. And then you have... Joe Janela and the Great Sasuke hit the ring.
It's going to be great if you've got the Great Sasuke in it. It just can't not be awesome.
Yeah, and do a 25-minute hardcore match, which involved the Great Sasuke doing a tope over the ropes through a table. It involved him trying to wear a bin and do a senton from the top rope to the floor. He didn't get the bin over his head, but, you know.
He has done that before, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
and just... It saw Joey Janela take a bump on the backs of 6 chairs. Yep. From the top rope as well. And it was just crazy to see it. And it was a crazy, like, you could tell the crowd by this point, because the show went on for about 4 hours, I think. It was a long show.
Yeah.
With, I think, a battle royal in the middle of it, which lasted about 45 minutes, which was, I think... Especially at 3 in the morning, that's going to tire everyone out.
A bit much.
Yeah, but then that main event. So the lasting image I'll have from this show, and maybe the lasting image I'll have from this WrestleMania weekend, is watching videos on Twitter of at 4 in the morning, in a wrestling ring, after a 4-hour show, Joey Janela and the Great Sasuke singing It's My Life by Bon Jovi.
I was going to say, the lasting image for me is going to be Jerry Lawler throwing a fireball at Jerry Ryan's private.
Oh, yes, that happened as well, didn't it?
Yeah, it's just like, this WrestleMania season has been the crazy. Bring on the crazy. As the DDT bookers tell Colt Cabana and Jerry Ryan, bring on the crazy. This is where it's been.
Yeah, it's just been mental. Just so much. I guess that's what you get when you get every wrestling company you could think of in one place at one time, and everyone wants to try and be a bit different and try and attract fans. You're going to get weird stuff happening, especially when you have shows going on as late as they did, when you had that much wrestling going on. Everyone gets a bit brain fried, no one really knows what's going on, everyone's trying to be the viral thing that stands out that weekend and that gets all over Twitter and gets all the attention, all the buzz. And so you get all this really weird, crazy stuff happening, which, as a fan watching, it's great because you're seeing everything you could ever want from wrestling right there in front of you for one weekend.
Plus as well, you get, like, you've got that element of people trying to make a living. They've travelled a long way, you know, and they've got to make this trip pay. And when you've got crossover, like, rosters, like the Progress roster, which can only use half its guys because a lot of them are contracted to New Japan or they're contracted to WXW,
so they can't go and work on the WWN shows or on the Access shows. So they've got to go work for somebody else to make up this trip worthwhile.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of them ended up doing matches for WWE actually at Access, which that was interesting to see WWE having matches for the WWN title and for, yeah, just really branching out and bringing in all this WWN or Progress talent.
We're going to move on to our big card of the day, which was Supercard of Honor, because it featured a lot of New Japan talent, and as you know, New Japan is our favourite promotion, so we tend to cover this quite closely. We don't go to every Ring of Honor show, because, you know, there's only so much time in the world for us to do things, and we can only watch so many wrestling shows. It's noticeable there's only us two on this week's show, because there's that much wrestling show, the others haven't caught up yet.
Yeah, I think everyone's just a bit burned out on just wrestling in general. There's so much going on.
Yeah, it's all a bit ridiculous. I mean, next week, we'll be at Wrestling Dontaku next week, so we're back on New Japan again.
Oh, it's come up already.
Yeah, it's all a bit ridiculous. So, we will go with Ring of Honor. We're not going to go through every match in fine detail, because some of them weren't that great. And also, it was like a seven-hour card.
See, that's another problem with when you've got that many shows in one weekend, you can't do a, like, this show, I think it went 4.5 hours.
It felt like
six. On a Saturday night.
Yeah.
Like, there's a limit, and you really saw that as this show went on, especially by the main event, people were burned out, people were tired. They weren't reacting anymore because they'd seen everything they could see. They'd reacted to everything they could, and they were just tired. They were done with it.
But we will get on. Brian Milanes, he defended the Beer City Bruiser, defeated Luke Hawks, PJ Hawks, and the Motor City Machine Guns in 6 minutes and 18 seconds in a 3-way tag match. PJ Hawks making his debut. Luke Hawks is a Hollywood actor stroke pro wrestler. Brian Milanes and the Beer City Bruiser are overweight. And the Motor City Machine Guns are a classic legendary tag team that can't get a win together since they lost the tag team titles. Does what it says on the tin, really. It was all right.
Pretty much.
Yeah. We also had a Ring of Honor Women's Title semi-final match. Kelly Klein defeats Mayu Iwatani by submission in 9 minutes. And I'm going to say why.
Yeah, it's a bit of a surprise. So for both of these semi-final matches for the Women of Honor tournament, it was weird choices for the winners.
Yeah. I mean, Mayu Iwatani is one of the hottest wrestlers in the world right now. So why doesn't she win this? And no knock on Kelly Klein, but she just isn't as good. And then the next one was Sumi Sakai, who defeated Tennille Dashwood, the former Emma of WWE fame, in 7 minutes and 53 seconds. I like Sumi a lot. She's a Joshi legend. However, Tennille Dashwood is the one you put the belt on.
Yeah, I mean, surely right now she's the star. She's just come off WWE. She's got the name behind her. She's got the interest. So surely she's the one you go with.
And if you don't go with her, you go with Deonna Purrazzo.
Yeah.
But if you want your babyface to establish the title and make it popular, go with Deonna Purrazzo or Mayu Iwatani. If you want a heel, you go with Tennille Dashwood. Surely that's how
makes
it works.
Makes sense, surely.
That's it. But no, apparently not. But we'll get to that in a minute. The first match of note was Chucky T versus Jonathan Gresham, 8 minutes and 30 seconds. Sexy Chucky T, accompanied by his best friend, Trent Barretta, wins a perfectly serviceable, good match, and nice to see Jonathan Gresham getting some major international recognition.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do with him this year, but Chucky T getting a win here, it's fine.
We had then a dad fight. It cannot be described any other way. Punishment Martinez pulled out all the stops and then found some more stops to pull out to defeat Tomohiro Ishii, your Ref Pro champion, 8 minutes 24 seconds, in a thoroughly enjoyable slobber knocker. What did you think of this, Mr. Edwards?
So that, just quickly, that's something that we... Another thing that happened we didn't cover was Ishii won the Ref Pro title.
Oh, yes. Forgot about that.
Happening. but yeah, I really enjoyed this match. I think Punishment Martinez is someone who has really been coming into his own over the last year, where as a sort of a big man in a company like this where big men are a rarity, he stands out, and he's really been, you know, he's been getting better and better, and this was an example of that showing. He stood up against Ishii, and he, you know, Ishii, we rave about being one of the best wrestlers in the world. Punishment Martinez stood with him and put on a really good match here, and so yeah, I enjoyed this. I thought it was good, and Martinez getting the win. I'm guessing they're going to be pushing him more going forward this year. I guess we'll see where they go with him.
I think he's probably like your best bet for a run at Dalton Castle, because you've got a guy that size. If Dalton Castle can keep him at bay, that really establishes Dalton Castle's title run as something special.
Yeah, I would think so.
Okay, the next match on this particular card was an absolute classic, which I really enjoy. Kota Ibushi and Hangman Page. Now, I'll be honest with you, Hangman Page, I've not been great strokes on, but in the recent weeks, he has really put things together. And to be honest with you, that Hangman gimmick no longer suits him. He's not a bar brawler, he's a sweet scientist these days, and he's got some serious aerial offense. He went toe-to-toe with Kota Ibushi, probably the best aerial wrestler in the world today, and did a fantastic job. What do you think of this, Alex?
Yeah, so similar to you, Hangman Page is someone who, at the start, when he originally came to New Japan, and when I first saw him in Ring of Honor, I didn't get it. I didn't really see what they saw in him. But now, since seeing more of his work, and since seeing his character develop on Being the Elite, it's clicked for me, and I get it. And I see what he can do. His character work has gotten much better. His wrestling, I've grown to appreciate more, and he seems to have gotten more comfortable with this sort of style. And I thought, like you said, this is a really, really good match. Really, really good.
Yeah, definitely. This is well worth the price of admission alone. Okay, the next match was the Ring of Honor Women's Championship. The Woman of Honor title, indeed. The very first one was crowned. Sumi Siaki defeats Kelly Klein in 7 minutes and 46 seconds. In a match that was underwhelming, to say the least, this should have been the semi-main event. It should have been 20 minutes long, and it should have been between two better wrestlers, to be honest. I mean, I love Sumi Siaki, like I said, but she can't hang these days the way she used to, and Kelly Klein does not have the experience to make a 20-minute match work, which is the reason why this match is 7 minutes and 46 seconds long. It's not long enough. It doesn't have the presence that it deserves for the amount of effort they've put in to make this tournament work. And to be honest with you, those women's titles matches, not the semi-finals, not being on the main show, meant that it didn't have as much cachet as it should have done, because if they cared about it, they'd have put them on the main show. And it's a good idea, badly executed. We've gone on up from bad idea, badly executed. We've now got to good idea, badly executed.
Yeah, I mean, you think with the amount of time they spent on this women's tournament and the amount of what seems to be effort that's gone into presenting this title as something that matters, you would want a big match to establish your first champion. You would want, as we said earlier, you would want Mayu Iwatani, one of the biggest women's wrestling stars in the world, Tennille Dashwood, coming off WWE with all that buzz behind her, or even, as you said, maybe Deonna Purrazzo gets in there further. Something more than this. Like, there's so many other directions they could have gone with this to make this a bigger deal and to really establish this title as something that's worth watching.
And it didn't help that the ending came far too quickly, because Sumi Sakai blew a moonsault spot where she landed with her head in the middle of Kelly Klein's chest, and then delivered a DDT, and it just looked like no one was convinced it was finished.
Yeah, I mean, and it's shoved right there in the middle of the card. It's the shortest match on the show, and it reeks of, you know, mid-2000s WWE Divas title stuff. Obviously, the wrestling, although not amazing, was better than that, but yeah, as in terms of the importance placed upon it, it was a time filler, which is really unfortunate for, you know, the finals of what's meant to be this big tournament.
Indeed. We'll move on to something that was a lot better. Sal Cal Uncensored successfully defended their Ring of Honor World six-man titles against Flip Gordon and the Young Bucks. 24 minutes and 8 seconds. This was a phenomenal match. And to be honest with you, I did not think Sal Cal Uncensored had these kind of matches in them anymore. And I don't think they've got any left, because they left it all in this match. With a cameo appearance by The Kingdom, which we probably could have done without, this match was outstanding. An effort from all six men had to be raised. I'm not a Flip Gordon fan, as you know, but I did think this is the kind of thing he's really, really good at, and it really allowed him to shine. What did you think, Alex?
Yeah, this match was great. So, I mean, everyone's been having the argument all week about what was better, which ladder match was better, this or the North American title one from NXT. I still think I prefer the NXT one, but this was really, really fantastic. It's the perfect environment, as you said, for someone like Flip Gordon, for the Young Bucks, where they had that ladder match with the Hardys last year at WrestleMania weekend, which basically it stole the weekend, and they really went for it again here. It was just, when you chuck six guys like this into a ladder match, this is what you want. You want your high-flying, crazy risk-taking, you want people bumping all over the place, you want loads of crazy big moves, but you want it done in a way that the story of it makes sense, and that it's, you know, it's followable and it's structured well, which is exactly what this was. This was a really fantastic match, and yeah, like you said, I didn't expect Daniels and Kazarian to be able to do this as well as they did. I thought they were getting up there in age, but they seem to have gone back in terms of their age, and they're really putting out these big performances.
45 is the new 27.
Apparently so, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, you have this and you have Suzuki.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I mean, it's an improvement because, like, unfortunately, Frankie Kazarian at Strong Style Evolved managed to blow a leg drop. So, you know, at least it's an improvement on that.
This is true. He's figured it out. He's back on track. He knows what he's doing now.
Okay, we move on next to the Ring of Honor World Tag Team title match. The Briscoes successfully defend against Hiroshi Tanahashi and Jay Lethal, 19 minutes and 35 seconds. This reminded me an awful lot of those 80s tag matches where you have the workhorse teams like Arn and Tully going up against the Flash babyface super teams like Ivan Koloff and Dusty Rhodes. This is that kind of match, and I thoroughly enjoyed it because it's a throwback to an old age, to an older era of wrestling. And to be honest with you, the more I watch Ring of Honor's big shows these days, the more they look like WCW pay-per-views from the late 1980s because they're going to the same buildings and they're filling them. What do you think of this, Alex?
I can see what you mean with that comparison. Yeah, that's definitely a good point. And yeah, this had that sort of similar feel. It was a good match, and I obviously love Tanahashi. Anything he does is great. Jay Lethal, I think, is really good. The Briscoes, I mean, I can... Again, it's one of those things where the real-life guy, or guys in this case, overcome the character a bit, and I find myself not being able to get into their matches.
Yeah.
Which is a problem when they were in New Japan going back a couple of years, it was something I spoke about then, where their matches were never really something I could properly get into. Similar thing here, but I'm not saying this was a bad match at all, it's a good match, but I found myself just not being able to get into it as much. Similar to the Sami Callihan Eddie Edwards match from the Impact Wrestling Lucha Underground show.
I think the same with me. I mean, watching the Briscoes wrestles, I was really objective with the Briscoes for that reason this time. And they do so much cool stuff. And if they were just nicer people, I'd enjoy them a lot more. I mean, just stuff like when they throw people outside, Jay turns around and says to the referee, "Hey, Paul, who's legal?" Because he wants to put the right guy in the ring. And it's stuff like that. That's the stuff you should hear more often. Do you know what I mean? It's like, they're really, really good at their jobs. They're just jackasses. And I can't be doing with it.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, but yeah, like you said, they do those little things really well, which makes their matches good, and it helps them to make sense, it makes the story work, and they're good matches, but it's just, I find myself not being able to get into them as much as I'd want to.
Okay then, we move on to the Ring of Honor World Television Championship. Silas Young defeats Kenny King, the champion, in 15 minutes and 56 seconds to start his second reign, with help from the Beer City Bruiser in this particular last man standing match. Kenny King got counted out when his ankles were zip tied together, and he got saved by the Impact Wrestling World Champion Austin Aries at the end of the match. He was working commentary, saving his old friend Kenny King from back in the Ring of Honor day, and it looks like Austin Aries is the next challenger to Silas Young for the Ring of Honor Championship. There's some weird and strange things afoot, are there not, Alex, in this modern wrestling world?
There are. You have, Austin Aries popping up all over the place, winning these titles, and now it looks like he's going for the TV title here, where I was a bit surprised when the title change happened, I didn't expect Silas Young to win it, but seeing the direction they're going with it, with Austin Aries challenging, it makes more sense. I could have done without seeing Beer City Bruiser, but that's what it is. But yeah, it was a good match. I was just surprised by the finish of it.
Yeah, it was a bit different from Ring of Honor standards, because you're not used to expect to see these kind of things. It's the kind of thing I see Yano do all the time.
Yeah, that's true, but Yano has the personality to back it up.
Yeah, he has some charm to him.
Exactly. Like, you can't not love Yano.
Exactly. All right, then we move on to the next match, which was actually Bully Ray and Cheeseburger versus The Dog, Rhett Titus and Will Ferreira. I didn't actually see this match. Was it any good, Alex?
So it was less of a match, more of a segment. It was The Dog's coming out and challenging. Cheeseburger comes out, but he doesn't have a partner. And so he calls on Bully Ray to tag with him. Bully Ray sort of accepts it. He does all his signature spots, all like the elbows and all the what's up, all that stuff. And then he turns on Cheeseburger and just cuts this blistering promo, turning heel, talking about how Cheeseburger, you know, shouldn't have forced him into taking this like nothing match. He's just going to the Hall of Fame and now he's here. And then the great thing is he gets Cheeseburger in a pile driver position, and the officials come out, they're trying to talk him down, and Bully Ray's just like, nope, if you take one step closer to me, I'm going to pile drive him and I'm going to get this whole show shut down. Because you had the whole thing with the Louisiana State Commission banning the pile driver. And so they worked that really well into the story, where, I mean, obviously we'd seen pile drivers everywhere. It seemed like that rule didn't really, you know, get enforced. We saw pile drivers earlier on in this show. But if you take it just as a moment and just as a promo like that, it was a really clever way to work that into things. And Bully Ray as a heel is just, he's outstanding, and I'm really looking forward to, I mean, I thought he was done wrestling. I thought he was retired. I thought he wasn't wrestling anymore, but it looks like they might be going forward and doing a few more matches with him in Ring of Honor, which, like I said, him as a heel is must watch.
As well, with that Louisiana State Commission, they did work it really well, because they were saying in the opening match, Chucky T couldn't use Awful Waffle, which is a running pile driver, you know.
Yeah.
So, but the daft thing is, Ring of Honor weren't affected by the Louisiana State Athletic Commission, because Louisiana State Athletic Commission gave WWE and Ring of Honor a free pass to do what they wanted.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So, even though the rule technically didn't apply, I thought it was still clever that they brought it up the way they did.
Yeah.
Even if it was a bit sort of a kayfabe-y sort of situation.
Yeah. Alright then, we move on to the semi-main event, which was Cody, who defeated, because he's a bastard, Kenny Omega, in 37 minutes and 8 seconds in an absolutely thrilling match, which was everything I hoped it would be, except, you know, Cody winning. But there you go. It was fun. It really, really was fun. There was an awful lot of high spots in this. Brandi Rhodes deserves some pops for taking the massive bump through a table that she did. Yeah, it just furthers the story of the end of Bullet Club. We have an accidental super kick party to Kenny Omega. It's going to be intriguing as to how this story plays out, and we're still living these chapters day by day. What do you think of this, Alex?
See, the weird thing about this is what you said at the start there, semi-main event. Why was this the semi-main event? Why didn't this go on last? This was the match that everyone was there to see. It's the match that's got this huge build-up. Everyone is into this feud. It's the hottest feud, maybe the hottest feud in wrestling right now. And this match was fantastic. It was, as you said, everything you would want. Kenny getting his revenge, finally getting to Cody. Cody being a fantastic heel and sort of finding his way out of all these situations, and just his heel work in this match was great. It was really, really good. Coming out with a police escort and everything, it was just perfect, perfect heel work. And then the whole thing with the Bucks, where they finally choose their side, they choose Kenny, but Cody swerves it and Kenny gets kicked, and I think Cody winning is not ideal. I think I obviously would have preferred Kenny, but the way it was done continues the story, which I like. They're obviously building this whole thing up to All in September, and that's where the true big end of the feud is going to happen.
That's got to be cage match blow off. That has to be
something like that. Yeah.
Oh, it's going to be one of Dusty's old classics, like a bunkhouse battle royal or something like that. I think Cody's going to pull out every old booking trick his dad would ever do in one match, in one card.
Which would be great to see. And I'm really looking forward to it, and I just hope that it somehow ends up on iPay or something so we can watch it.
I'm sure it will do. I'm guessing it'll either end up on New Japan World or on a club, I would think. Or Fight TV. So, yeah.
I guess we'll see close to time, but yeah, this match was just great. I'm just so confused as to why it didn't go on last.
I'm guessing it's because it's really a New Japan match that they borrowed.
I mean, I guess, but you say that, but a lot of the story is actually taking place in Ring of Honor. All of the Bury the Bear stuff and everything like that, it's all been Ring of Honor stuff. And a lot of it has also taken place on Being the Elite, which is, you know, it's an American YouTube show. So, I don't know. The crowd all built up to this match, and it's really unfortunate for the main event that happened, because after this, they were done. This was what they wanted to see. They didn't care about the title match after this.
Which was unfair on Dalton Castle and Marty Scurll, because they put in a fantastic match. Let's go to that match then. Dalton Castle successfully defends with the boys against Marty Scurll. 31 minutes and 40 seconds. It was a really good match. It dragged to start with. It took a while to get going. And I've noticed this with Marty Scurll matches as of late. He's a slow starter, but not in the like Okada slow starter way. In the you're worried it's going to fall apart slow starter way. There was a blow.
This was a 30-minute match that could have done with being 15 to 20.
And if Marty had remembered where he'd put his white powder, that would have improved things as well. There's little bits that were off. It's like it was a worthy World Championship match, and I really enjoyed it. I love the intrigue of what they're trying to do, but equally, it just kind of all didn't fit the way it was supposed to.
And that's the thing, like you said, it was a really, really good match. I mean, Dalton Castle and Mighty Scurll are both fantastic wrestlers. They worked well together. Like, it was a really good match. It was just the card placement. The crowd weren't into this.
Yeah, there were spots that were just slightly off.
Exactly, and that really affected it, where you could tell they were going for these big reactions and they weren't getting them because people were tired.
Yeah.
People had used up all their energy on the Kenny and Cody match.
And then the card was 5 hours long.
Exactly.
You know, and
which, that works for a Wrestle Kingdom or something where you have these epic matches and they all deliver. But with this, it just didn't.
No, it didn't quite get there. Having said that, there was really good stuff in it. My favourite bit was Nick Aldis helping out his mate, Marty Scurll, the NWA World Heavyweight Champion, interfering in a match for the Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Championship. This is like 1983. It's like Harley Race claiming the bounty on Hulk Hogan. Although that was one of the stories in Pro Wrestling Illustrated. They hired Harley Race to go to WWE to destroy Hulk Hogan. And there was all sorts of other ones, stories like that, you know, where you get a guy come into a territory to go headhunt somebody. That's what this feels like. It feels like one of those old angles, but it just happens to be the NWA Heavyweight Champion of the World, whose best mate is challenging for the Ring of Honor Championship. I love that. It's something we haven't seen in wrestling for so long.
And it's something that hopefully we'll get to see more of with Ring of Honor, you know, branching out and being open to working with other people, with Impact being willing to work with others, with independent wrestling as a whole growing to the point that it has. That sort of territory style of booking and storytelling is something that could make a comeback, and it could be really fun. And yeah, like you said, that was one of my favourite parts as well, where you have Nick Aldis he just happens to be sitting there in the front row, and what's he doing? He's helping out Marty. Like, it was subtle in that not everyone would have known a A, that he was there, and B, that he was the NWA champion, and C, that he has that relationship with Marty Scurll. Yeah. And so it's, you have to be sort of in the know to completely get it. But if you are, then it's a really cool little Easter egg, and it was really nice. It was like that sort of subtle storytelling, which was really cool.
They also, I think, it kind of like puts in the idea of what Billy Corgan wants to do with the NWA. You know, the NWA title has not been relevant for a while. That's not to say they haven't had good champions, but they've had no regular TV placement to get anything out there. Their only the recent run in New Japan meant that the title got a higher profile, but the champions of that era were Tenzan and Kojima, the guys who have been there already. They had good runs and they had good championship matches, but it wasn't the top echelon. You weren't getting a card going after the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. So what Billy Corgan seems to want to do with this title is to try and get as many defenses for it as he possibly can and give it some cachet, which I think is really what needed to happen with that belt at this particular time.
Definitely. Yeah, that whole, the New Japan relationship was a bit of a disaster all round, where, like you said, it was treated as a sort of a cheap mid-card title, which isn't what you want at all for the NWA World Championship. And so this is a much better way to go with it, where you're forming those relationships with the bigger name independent companies, but you're not sort of booking yourself down. You're treating yourself as an equal, and you're, you know, putting on these great matches. You're really putting your name out there, and you're establishing that brand as something that does still matter.
Colt Cabana, like you were saying on commentary, is challenging for that in China in a couple of months' time. So they got a chance to like show their exposure. Hey, the NWA is going to China. They had a chance to expose the company to an audience that maybe hasn't been watching it, but is their traditional audience as well. Ring of Honor fans are really what the NWA audience of the 1990s was.
Yeah.
You know.
And it's that audience they need to try and recapture, where if they go about it this way, where they have these sort of these crossovers, or they have, you know, talent that people are aware of going and competing for this title, it will build up that brand, where you're not getting your Big Daddy Yum Yums and your Rob Conways. You're getting people like Nick Aldis, like Colt Cabana, who people actually know and care about, competing for this title.
Exactly. Right, well, that covers our coverage, really, for the WrestleMania week, our Other Side of Mania annual podcast that tells you the story of the other things that went on during WrestleMania week. I'd like to thank my guest for today, Mr. Alex Edwards, for his time and his patience.
Thank you for having me.
You can find him at Alex_Edwards_ on Twitter, and you can find the show at Troopany Show on Twitter as well. You can find me at Sheriff Lone Star. If you're a Facebook kind of person, you can find us on Facebook, The Troopany Show. And if you would like to help The Troopany Show be free forever for everyone, you can go and pledge on Patreon, where we post all sorts of different things every week. We try and vary the product going on over there. There's some written stuff that I write for Blogger. There's some the shows. I sometimes do a podcast of the day. It all depends on how much time I've got and what other interesting things I can put up there. Okay, thank you very much for listening to us this week. We hope you've enjoyed WrestleMania. We hope you've enjoyed the shows, because all wrestling is great wrestling. Take care, and we'll speak to you next week. Bye.